You're listening to TSN 1200.
Back to Bjorkstrand, shoots, a save is made, rebound, another save, a Werenski swing, and he puts it in for the score! And I got two words for you, game over!
From the drop, a Hague shot blocked. Knights control again, here's Whitecloud to the middle, a one-timer tipped, score! Ryan Reeves got a piece of it, and it fluttered by Dubnyk, the goaltender.
And it's still loose in the goal mouth area, and they score! Corey Perry! Perry on the power play! And it's 1-0 Montreal!
I was stunned. Surprised wouldn't begin to explain my reaction. You know, I'm a dad of two daughters. I have four granddaughters, and what was done was horrific.
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 8:16 here on a Friday morning, getting set for the long weekend. J.R. Hammer and Gord Wilson is sitting in for Simmer again this morning. Some of the highlights from some players in the news based on trades and signings yesterday. And Gary Bettman weighing in on the Habs' decision to draft Logan Mailloux as well on NHL radio yesterday. We'll play you the commissioner's comments in their entirety a little later on in the show. But in the meantime, we got one last visit with our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin, to get through. And good thing we got some news to talk to with Dave on his final day. Dave, as always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. We always have news to talk about.
Yes,
we know that. We can always create news to talk about. That's what we do.
Will Dave Poulin, because you, like a lot of other people, heading into your summer. So is Dave Poulin's summer revolve around just doing nothing? Do you play golf every day? Are you a cottage guy? Are you getting on a plane to go somewhere? What are the plans?
No, I didn't grow up as a cottage guy. And, you know, and so I think when you do that, you think you have to have a cottage. I was never a cottage guy growing up, so I didn't think I had to have one at any point. I'm an avid golfer. That's usually, at least four times a week. I got a really good morning group, and I play at an old course. I'm actually where Arnold Palmer won his first PGA tournament at Weston. Yeah, it's a great old track, a Willie Park course, and I have a really good group of guys there. And then I will get across that border when they figure this out at some point, and I will visit my daughters in Philadelphia and Chicago. So that's a priority for me. But it's been strange because this feels like the end of two seasons. It doesn't feel like the end of one season. It feels like it's been that lumped together with all of the questions coming out of the bubble and when the next season would start and what kind of season it would look like. And it seemed like we kind of rolled right through last summer, if there even was one. And this is still not normal because it's the end of July. It's not a regular thing. But my body and mind haven't changed from when I was a player with the end of the season. And there's like a decompression that comes for me at the end of a season that's really strange that I don't think I even control. And guys, I haven't played in 26 years.
Creatures of habit.
Still feel it at the end of the season. I don't know if you're the same way, Gord, but I really feel like you know, it's ended and it has to go through free agency and it has to go through that now as a broadcaster. But it's very, very strange, and I'm looking forward to maybe the next 6 weeks of pretty quiet downtime.
I have to be honest with you, when pandemic became a common word in our vocabulary, our Senators' last game was on March 12th, I think, in Los Angeles, and then we went home. I held out hope, and I think there were still 12 games left in the Senators' season. I held out hope until probably July 1st, July 5th, that they were going to end the season, get a chance to end the regular season. I get paid by the game, so it was necessary for me to keep my fingers crossed. So I totally agree with how you're feeling about two seasons kind of rolled into one. I have to ask you, though, David, you've commented on the group of players that you play with four times a week. Are you a good golfer, David Poulin?
My golf game is very much like my hockey game. And if you see me play, that's what I'll ask people. Did you ever see me play hockey? You know, golf, I'm exactly the same. No one ever said, what a beautiful stride. No one ever said, what a great shot you have. No one ever said, wow, you're really nifty with the puck. I'm a good teammate in golf. I'm fun to play with, and I am a grinder. It doesn't matter what happens. I'm wow. always in a hole, and I've got a decent short game, and so it never leaves me. It comes and goes. Just, you know, it's very similar to hockey. It really is, you know. And I'll play with Jeff O'Neill, he's literally been on the plus side of the ledger in golf. He's that good. And
really?
He's that good. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. He hits it like a pro. I mean, a bad day for him on a course is 73. And it's, my game is just totally different than his. It looks different. It feels different. And I'm totally fine with it. I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah.
I don't lose a lot of golf balls. And, I enjoy my game. I enjoy it very much. I have a really eclectic group of guys that I play with. And they're actually, I didn't even know it at the time when I joined the course, but there are some former players that I do play with. Mike Pellick I play with, Mark Osborne. Jeff is a member at our course, as I mentioned. Who else? Jimmy McKenney is an absolute pleasure to play with, just a pleasure to play with. So Mark Napier's involved. So it's a good group. There's a real good group of guys there.
And just last, very quickly, is Dave Poulin have long arms and short pockets, or short arms and long pockets after the game?
Very generous after the game. Very generous. I picked up a habit from a regular partner of mine. So when he's not in our foursome, there's 28 of us. So they mix and match, you know, all the time with these groups. And there's one guy, and he's got a deal worked out with the waitress that he buys the first round every group he plays with.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I picked up that habit from him when he's not in my group, because he supersedes me as being the first round buyer if we're together.
All right, good stuff. Well, let's wrap up our time together with you. We do have some pretty good topics today, and I want to start with the decision by the New York Rangers. When Jeff Gordon got fired as GM and John Davidson was let go as well, the message was very clear from ownership. We need to toughen up our team. When they brought in the biggest sheriff in the NHL in Ryan Reeves, mainly to deal with, I guess, Tom Wilson. Do you think it was necessary for the New York Rangers to take it, I guess, as far as they did by bringing in Reeves?
I can understand the presence of him with their young players. And if I think back to when Vegas acquired Reeves, Murray Craven was part of that management group at that point. And I talked to him about it, and he said, we didn't even know how big a factor he was, but they sort of unexpectedly had a great start in Vegas. And he said, we just need a presence, and Reeves presents the biggest presence in the NHL. And the Rangers aren't maybe thought of as a young group, but they still have a pretty young group of players there. Lafreniere is there, Kako is there, you know, they've got Kraftsoff now. So they've got some young guys. And that is the ultimate presence. Now, they started it with Sammy Blais and Barkley Gaudreau in terms of how they would play, more of a gritty, you know, those are both good third-line guys, great third-line guys, fourth-line guys. But this is the presence in the league. And he plays the role very effectively. He, you know, and there still is that presence. There still is. And Tom Wilson is, you know, arguably the best combination of player and presence there is in the league. And you know, and you heard his name mentioned when Tyler Boucher was drafted by Ottawa. It's the presence of a player. And as a young player in the age group he plays in, Boucher brings that presence. And it's a very, very attractive thing, particularly when it comes with the quality of play. But it doesn't surprise me. Chris Drury is a former player. You know, I'd have to go back and look at the teams he played with. But at some point as a young player, I'll guarantee you, he played with a player who he felt provided that presence. And I mean, I have to speak, guys. I played for the ultimate team, correct? I mean, when I joined the team in Philadelphia, you know, people asked me if I was tough, and I said I have no idea because I never had to be. It just didn't. I mean, I never thought about it once in my career. Like, think about it. I went from the Philadelphia Flyers to the Boston Bruins, you know, in a day when it was a big part of the game. And not once did I lace up my skates, you know, fearing what was going to happen physically that night. And it's a pretty cool way to go through an NHL career, guys. It really is.
From the other side of the country, how does this change the dynamics in Vegas? This is a team now that has said goodbye to probably their two most popular players in the last couple of seasons, in Marc-Andre Fleury and now Reeves.
It's significant. And the, you know, and particularly the way that Marc-Andre Fleury departed, I think is still with a lot of people. But I mean, they're, you know, Kelly McCrimmon is all about getting it done. And then Bill Foley's the same way. And you think about, I mean, go to Nate Schmidt, you know, and who was a really popular original member of that team. And they had a chance to get Alex Pietrangelo, and they just looked at Nate Schmidt and said, well, you don't fit anymore. And that's the way they've done business, arguably right from the start. And, you know, and you'd think about it if you were going to sign out there, and yet they've paid well and they've won and it's been a good city to play in. So, you know, if you do all of those things, it's maybe easier to get away with the way you do it.
I wanted to ask you just a philosophical question. You know, you mentioned, you know, back in the day, rough and tough hockey when you were playing, you know, was seen as something that was essential. The game has, I don't want to say evolved as in it was bad then and is better now, but skill is valued a lot. And in, with some teams, philosophically, the physical side of the game is not seen to be as important. Where do you come down if you were still in management in the NHL? Would you still want to have a very physical element to your team?
I think it's a necessary element the deeper you get in the playoffs. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when Tampa added that element, and there's, we're not talking about fighting. We're talking about being able to play a physical game at certain points, and being able to play any way is maybe the best way to put it. I mean, what kind of player is Braden Point? Well, he's a highly skilled player who can play in any type of game. And I think that's more what I'm talking about, not at all from a fighting standpoint, because I think fighting will phase out of the game just through the evolution of it and attrition. I think it'll go. And I never thought it would, but I do think it will now. But the physical element, playing in front of the net, you know, we watched Montreal's big defense control the front of their net effectively. That will be there, and that will always be there. And, you know, if you take a Victor Hedman, I mean, people underestimate that he's a physical player. They look at skill, but, you know, at 6'6", 240 pounds, he's a very physical player and a very effective player. So I think it'll always be there. It'll always be a point of the game, but you have to have a skill component now that maybe you didn't then. You can't just sit on the fourth line and, you know, and be one-dimensional.
Dave, I think it's fair to say there are some teams in the National Hockey League that have to overpay to keep players in their market. Every market is different, obviously. Zach Werenski signed 6 years, $57.5 million. He instantly becomes the third highest paid defenseman in the National Hockey League. And some around the league would say, wow, he's overpaid perhaps. But did Columbus maybe have to do that to keep him in Columbus?
I believe they did, and I believe they did right now. And you know, this isn't going to be a Columbus commercial, but you've traveled there, Gordon, and it's a good city. It's a really good city, and it can be a really good hockey town. The rink's in a great place. All around it is great. And I've traveled there for a number of years, both to play against Ohio State, I was in a college game. I had a regular annual golf trip there that was just disrupted, that we went every year to play at Jack's course there at Muirfield for a couple of days before the tournament. And so I've spent some time in Columbus and really enjoyed it. And I think it gets a little bit of a bad rap because of how many players have left there over the years. They have to win there. That's what they have to do. And Werenski became more important when Seth Jones left. But if you go through over the years, guys, I mean, if you started with, you know, their first draft pick ever, Rick Nash, who left, and then Voracek left early, and then Ryan Johansson wanted out early, and then Pierre-Luc Dubois more recently, Panarin came and went, Bobrovsky, they have to keep players there. And who knows what Patrick Laine, who signed his qualifying offer, is going to do. And I like their young group of players. You know, I thought they had a really, really good draft. They got Kent Johnson, who's highly, highly skilled. They took Cole Sillinger and the defenseman, Corson Coolmans. That was all first round this year. But they've got some good young players, Liam Foudy, you know, they've got Bemstrom I like, Ken Stenland I like. So they've got some good young players. I think this was a critical, critical move for Yarmo to be able to keep him. He also very sneakily, I think, picked up Jake Bean from Carolina, and who went through the expansion draft. He's only 23 years old, a first-round pick, and they signed him for 3 years. They extended Boone Jenner, you know, who's a lifelong Columbus Blue Jacket. So I think this is a concentrated effort to look after guys that really show they want to be there, because everyone who plays there, guys, loves it. I mean, they love it. You know, they'll tell you that, except they don't stay. And I think they don't stay because they want an opportunity to win. They have to win in Columbus.
Five defensemen have signed big money deals this summer, Dave. Five of the top nine paid defensemen signed this summer. Miro Heiskanen is the, you know, gets the least amount at about $8.5 million, but Cale Makar $9 million, Dougie Hamilton $9 million, Seth Jones $9.5 million, and Rowenski comes in at just over $9.5 million. It sometimes depends on when you sign, but if you were to rank those five defensemen, which of those five do you like the best?
Oh boy,
Rowenski, you know, Jones, Hamilton, Makar, and Heiskanen.
Yeah, I'd probably starting with Makar, but I'm a big Seth Jones guy. I really am. I've never totally warmed to Dougie Hamilton, and I'm not sure why. I see the numbers. I see the game. But that just really hasn't fit me. I think Heiskanen's a real up-and-comer as well. So I'd probably go Werenski in the middle of that group, Jones ahead of him, Makar at the top, then Heiskanen, and then Dougie Hamilton. That's probably my order if I've got those five that you said.
Good memory.
It's really a lot of my memory here Friday morning.
Dave, it's a lot of money that has been spent, and I guess we should never, ever be surprised on the 1st of July or whenever free agency opens up at the amount of money that is doled out year after year after year. But I'm totally shocked at, I think there's almost $1 billion that's been spent so far on the free agents, and there are still a lot left. I want to get into that in just a second here as well. But are you at all surprised that there's been this amount of money that's been spent in a flat cap world or flat cap era for the next couple of seasons?
I really am. And they think they've protected themselves. If you look at the deals, a lot of them are by both the players and the team's accord, cash loaded on the back end. And that deals with two different things. That deals with revenue streams of teams. So if you look at cash over cap, the cash is much low on the front end of a lot of these deals and increases as the deal go on. Now, there's two reasons for that. One is the revenue has not been there for the team, so they don't have to actually give you the cash right now. They're pushing it out. And the second thing is the escrow is higher on the player's side. So the players don't want the cash right now because they're having to pay a higher percentage in escrow for the next couple of years. So this is almost like the credit card guys, and there's a lot of hope that it's going to go up. And it's not going to cost the team short term as much as it looks like it is, but it's going to eventually. So they better be hoping for increased revenues as this continues. New TV deal on the American side is also a factor.
Yeah,
and then, you know, I believe there's, and I say only 5 years left on the TV deal on the Canadian side. So, you know, does that come back into play? Because some of these deals push out 7 and 8 years.
I mentioned that there were a number of players still available on the free agent market. I want to throw two names at you here, maybe three if I can squeeze them in here. But of interest to me, David Krejci still not signed with Boston, even though there is an expected deal to come. There are also reports now out of Boston that indicate Krejci might be listening to offers, and certainly the Ottawa Senators would be in the mix. What are you hearing on Krejci, and is there a possibility that he could end his career? Because I think he's 35 now. Is there a possibility he could end his career not in a Boston Bruin uniform?
I guess there is that possibility. I don't see it. I don't see him leaving Boston. I simply don't. And Boston works that magic, however they do it. And they make you believe that you're a Boston Bruin and you're going to, you know, probably be underpaid at some point, but handsomely compensated. I just think he remains. I do. I understand that there is a connection to the Ottawa area, you know, through his wife and, you know, where he played his junior hockey. And I understand all that. He played in Gatineau and, you know, apparently still has a summer home up in that area. So he'd love to make those connections. And if I'm David Krejci's agent, I'm probably making those connections when I'm negotiating with the Boston Bruins. I see him as a Bruin, unless he wants a different flavor and a different challenge and to be the part of what he knows is a good young team. And that's the only way you get him. And it would have to be probably for a couple of years, and the Bruins may only offer one. I think he remains a Bruin.
one other player that catches my eye here at the top of this available list, and I would go after him in a heartbeat. My guess is the New York Islanders do not want to lose him, but Casey Zizekas has been a centerman that has centered a line that has been probably one of the best fourth lines, if not in the Eastern Conference, then in the National Hockey League. Casey Zizekas, where does he end up if he does move out of Long Island?
Well, it's amazing that Lou Lamoriello gets to do business on his terms, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
yes. It's amazing. Like, how does that happen? How does he say, well, we're just going to do it on my terms, and that's what's going to happen? Because it hasn't only been him. Kyle Palmieri hasn't signed anywhere else. He's still out there. I mean, Zajac hasn't signed anywhere. Like, it's like, okay, we'll wait for you, Mr. Lamoriello, to do what you want to do, and you decide what you're going to do with us. Casey Zizekas in a heartbeat for me, in a heartbeat, Gord. I would want him on the team. The way he competes, I mean, if you're plugging in, you know, and watch, if he does leave, if he were to leave, somehow it would be to Tampa.
<You know>? Oh, gosh.
To
yeah,
really
okay.
frustrate you. You know, I mean, who knows? But, he'd be so high on my list, and I'm sure he's entertained offers. And for whatever reason, he's waiting to see, you know, what gets done. And if he is in the plans for the New York Islanders, you know, they got a pretty good thing going on there. I will admit that. They did all of what they did without Anders Lee this year, you know, who will be back, their captain. And they've got a good group building and some good young kids coming. So hard to pry him out of there. But once again, we've seen players that love cities leave. But we're waiting on to see what Lou Lamoriello is going to do, apparently. Amazingly.
Yeah,
as always. All right, let's end our time with you, Dave, by doing a Senators question. And there's not a day that goes by that we don't get emails, texts, tweets from fans who are, I think, impatient, I guess maybe is the right word, for a Brady Tkachuk contract extension. Again, from a guy who is a former player to a former management person in the National Hockey League. What do you tell the fans about how this will play itself out over the summer?
That it's going to be in the best interest of both the player and the team, and they'll have to be patient and watch it happen. And I believe it'll be some sort of a bridge deal like his brother Matthew signed, and, you know, a three-year deal potentially, maybe similar money to what that deal was, and that, you know, that he'll be an Ottawa Senator for a long time, and this is all part of doing business. And if I'm a player right now, I'd rather leave it on the bridge, because, you know, rather than extend it out and take short money on the front end cash wise, I think I'd rather bet on myself, if that's what Brady Tkachuk, you know, the term would be. And he's a confident young man who's a really good hockey player. I think he's gonna be an Ottawa Senator for a long time.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll put a wrap on it. First of all, we get tons of great feedback, Dave, when you come on, from all our listeners. So I want to thank you very much on their behalf for stepping in on short notice after the news of Pierre Maguire, because this is an important spot that a lot of people like to listen to and get perspective, and you've provided great perspective over the last 3 weeks. So very appreciative of you doing that on short notice. But on that note, want to wish you a great rest of the summer. Hope the border opens at some time so you can go visit your daughters. That's the most important thing, but especially to enjoy some downtime, because we can tell you now, Dave, the season is over. You can now put your head on the pillow and enjoy some downtime, and we'll reconvene at some point down the road. But really appreciate the time.
Well, thanks very much, JR. Gord, have a great summer, and it's been a pleasure working with you guys.
There we go. Welcome back, everybody. 8:46 on a Friday morning. JR Hammer simmers off this week and next, by the way. Gord Wilson sitting in today. It's a wrench throwing Friday, by the way. So keep the wrenches coming. More of those coming up in just a second. But again, a hearty thanks and lots of great feedback on text this morning for Dave Poulin for stepping in short notice.
Fantastic.
In the last 3 weeks after Pierre Maguire made a career turn. That comes up very suddenly. But it's been great having Dave's perspective, because he can come at you from every way. Former player, former coach, head coach, U.S. NCAA hockey, former management person, assistant GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and now 7 years covering the game with TSN. It's not often you get someone with the width and breadth of experience that that he can bring to the table.
Absolutely, and fantastic. You know, it's interesting because oftentimes when you're doing an interview with someone, you're able to fire off the subject matter or, you know, talk about little different talking points, give them the heads up of what you want to talk about. In this case, just before Dave came on, I was in communication with Matty Hamer and said, can we just throw anything at him? And Matt goes, yeah, don't worry about it. Just throw names at him and he'll go. And away he goes. Casey Cizikas, kaboom, who he would have on his team in a heartbeat, as would I. There's no question about that. But just the little things that that he can add. Now, that being said, his predecessor in Pierre Maguire
yes.
could do the same thing as well. And, I mean, it's just a wonderful segment that we have on the air. Do we have 2 seconds here that
yes.
I can just
yes, we have a guest coming listener. Up but who's going to be calling us, so stand by, but he's good for now.
Okay, well, I'm used to getting interrupted here at home, so in all the long drawn out
how's the how's Levi's gas problem, by the way, your dog?
Better. I think so, yeah. Okay. He's not in the office here now, so okay. I think Trish took him out for a quick walk and maybe that helped. That being said, I do have an update on the road trip that you guys were talking about in the first hour,
yes.
and I know there's a lot of listeners who may not have joined us in the first hour but are joining us now. Pierre Maguire, Sean Donovan, and Jesse Winchester are en route to Plymouth, Michigan, for a showcase event that the United States is participating in. Team USA is participating in, the U18. Is it U18? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's a summer. World
U20.
U20.
Yeah,
because
okay.
it's a drafted prospect. So
right.
Part.
Yes. Pardon me. Tyler Boucher is involved. Tyler Clevin's involved. That being said, they're en route, and there was a lot of confusion. And Matt Hamer spoke with Pierre Maguire earlier today
yes.
and then relayed the story on the air in the first hour.
Poorly.
That you totally confused. Okay, you got all mixed up
with yes.
who was driving, how many were driving,
yeah.
is there a parade of player development members of the Ottawa Senators driving in
separate cars, which seemed odd.
Cars down the
story was poorly told by Matt, who
no.
was talking to Pierre.
Okay, well, or poorly
not
listened
true.
To, maybe, eh? Okay, Trish, let's listen properly here and go from there. Anyway, here is a complete I'll say clarification only because you need clarifying, John. It is Sean Donovan driving.
Yep.
Pierre Maguire in the passenger seat.
Okay.
And Winnie, Jesse Winchester, is in the back. Okay. And they expect to arrive probably within the next 6 or 7 hours, probably there by 3 o'clock. They do hope to speak with the Senator prospects, and there are a few of them that are participating in this. They hope to, but because of COVID, there are restrictions when people get down to watch. So there is the possibility that they don't get a chance to talk to them today or tomorrow, but will eventually. So
okay.
there
right.
you go.
All
three, by the way, are double vaxxed.
Okay, there we go. And they're in Dono's truck, which I've seen, which yes. is like a living room on wheels. So
they
all good.
They all congregated at
Dono's new farm?
The new farm in
Spencerville.
Well, he called it Spence Vegas. So,
okay. All right.
We've
got clarification, which is good. All right. Well, we've got a guest coming on, which of course, and we talked to Dave Poole, and hey, what are your plans for the summer? He's going to be doing some traveling, as I think a lot of people are. A lot of people are looking forward to actually either getting out of Dodge and go visiting somewhere for the opportunities finally open, or maybe welcoming guests as well. And this is where our next guest comes in. He is the president and CEO of Tourism Ottawa. We welcome to the show this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, Michael Crockett. How are you doing this morning, Michael?
Very good, JR. Good morning. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, and thanks very much for joining us. You guys have launched a new program, which we'll get details on in just a second. I think we all know, but maybe you can put it in terms of numbers or impact, how big tourism is for Ottawa, and we just haven't had the opportunity for people to visit our great city in a long, long time. So what has been just the impact economically and just overall over the past 16 months?
It's been tough. You know, normally, in a normal year, tourism is one of the top three parts of our economy in Ottawa. Normally, about 43,000 of our friends and our neighbors and our family members work in some part of the tourism sector. And when you think about the visitors who come to our city, in a normal year, they spend about $2.2 billion here. And so think of all the businesses and the people that supports. And you're right, we've lost a lot of that in the last year and a half. Somewhere around a third of tourism employees are still without jobs. And we estimate that over 2020 and 2021, during the pandemic, our city's lost about $2.8 billion in total visitor spending. So it's a huge impact on people and on businesses. And I think I believe for a full economic recovery for our city, we need the tourism industry to recover.
If you can, just describe the tourism launch the campaign that you're launching here. It's an interesting concept, one that I think can clearly be expanded beyond the invite to.
It sure can. And what's great is this is a very small ask that we're asking people to do, but it has a huge collective impact. And what we've seen, of course, over the past year and a half is that this community has really pulled together, supported local businesses through the pandemic. And what's great is that residents of Ottawa can also be part of the economic recovery for the tourism industry. So in this specific case, what we're asking is for all residents, all families in the city, just invite two people to come and visit you from out of town. Think of those people that you've missed seeing over the last year and a half, who you'd love to invite to come and visit you for a few days. And if every family invites two people to stay in Ottawa for three nights, that can have a huge economic impact for our tourism businesses and employees. So we add it up collectively. It amounts to about $500 million being injected back into visitor spending in the city, and it supports about 1,500 jobs. So again, a small ask, just invite a couple people to come and visit you. And as you say, we can invite a lot more than a couple too. So there's lots we can do together.
Michael, how often have you heard the word staycation being used? And I only speak from experience here. A lot of my neighbors are doing the same thing, staying in town to enjoy their vacation, enjoy their summer holidays or what's left of them. But they're hanging around because there are so many things to do in this area.
It's been a year of staycations like in no other year before, for sure. And I don't blame anybody who wants to go and visit other places. I want to go visit my family as well in other parts of the country, so we don't blame anybody for that. But you're right, there's so much that we haven't been able to see in our own city for the last year and a half. And as people do start to explore their city, a lot of people are also finding things they didn't even know existed in this city. So we are very blessed to be living in a city that has so many things to see and do. And one of the things that has totally impressed me coming out of lockdowns is that how many entrepreneurs there are still trying new things in the tourism sector. I mean, we opened a new zip line a month ago. I mean, that's pretty amazing to be doing that in the middle of a pandemic and seeing new events coming to Ottawa, like the Beyond Van Gogh exhibit at Lansdowne, and even businesses who are investing in themselves and expanding to new locations and new services. It's incredible to see, but that's the resilience of this industry too.
Michael Crockett is the president and CEO of Tourism Ottawa. I know it's called the Invite To campaign for friends and family. I actually, Michael, have 8 people coming in next week from Alberta and 1 from the Netherlands. So I'm 9. So if there's 3 other listeners or 4 other listeners out there who can't do this, I got you covered. I got you covered for 9 people coming into town next week. So that's all good. I'm sure you guys have studied this. And how long do you guys forecast it will take for the tourism industry in Ottawa to kind of get, I guess, for lack of a better term, fully on its feet?
It's a great question, and it's a difficult one to answer, but let me answer it a couple of different ways. First, we are reopening, which is great, but reopening doesn't necessarily mean recovery. And so we are seeing right now, and if you're in the Byward market, you can see it yourself, there is quite a bit more leisure visitation happening now than there has been for most of the past year and a half. So that's a very positive sign, but that's only a part of the industry. When you think of the rest of the sector being things like meetings and conventions and big sporting events and sport tournaments for kids who bring, you know, you bring 300 kids teams to a city, they're also bringing their families. And that's a huge economic impact that those have. But those are planned years in advance. And those things aren't coming back right away. Those things are not coming back this fall or this winter. So there is going to be this leisure tourism recovery, which we're seeing right now, which is great, but that's only part of the story. And we're still a couple of years away from getting back to pre-pandemic levels for sure.
All right. Your website is ottawatourism.ca. It's the Invite To Friends and Family program. Next week is Pledge Week. So everybody gets the long weekend to think about who they'd like to invite. And listen, Michael, the way we work in my family, at least, I don't know about yours, is family like fish begins to smell after 3 days. So I when you're thinking about who to invite, just think about who you want to spend, like whether it's 3 days or a week with. Okay, because there are, let's face it, some family members, you're like, yeah, not so much. Make sure, just think the long weekend, right? You want to pick the good ones, right, Michael?
And hey, there's dozens of hotels that'll be happy to take your family members off your hands.
There you go. All good. Listen, thanks for popping on and talking about the new program. Best of luck with it, and we'll look forward to seeing more visitors here in Ottawa.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, take care. There is Michael Crockett, President and CEO of Tourism Ottawa, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com. I love my family, Gordy.
It sounds like it. Family are like fish. They smell after 3 days, and you want them out of your house.
Get out of the house, as Michael said. 3 days in the house is good, and then go find a hotel or an Airbnb or whatever for the other four.
That's you don't have to describe them as like smelly fish, for heaven's sake.
Well, just trying to paint a picture here, buddy. Just trying to paint a picture.
Good one here.
All right, 8:57. We'll take a break. Still another hour of this extravaganza to go as we head toward the long weekend. Stand by. Latest news is on the way. We'll run down the scoreboard. The latest on the Olympics. By the way, the Netherlands-U.S. Women's soccer game is gone to extra time, and that's of interest to Canada, which won earlier this morning in penalty kicks versus Brazil. They will play the winner of the Netherlands-U.S. game in the semifinal in women's soccer. So we'll get you up to date on that coming up. Throughout the rest of the next hour, we'll hear from Gary Bettman. He weighed in on the Logan Mayhew controversy yesterday. So the comments of the commissioner coming up, and much more as we continue along. Gord Wilson sitting in for Simmer. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.